Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. It is Thursday, April 30, 2009. Can you believe we're almost in May already? This year is going by like every year with a flash. We always say that. Today, we're going to be talking about a birthday that you might have missed, and that was Barbie turning 50. This is a classic conversation on this program, and it had such a response. We're going to be having this conversation again because it tells us a great deal about America, about our understanding of women. And it tells a story most people don't know about America's most famous doll that's of interest not just about toys, but about issues of morality, values, truth, and the shape of the American culture. We're going to be talking about that today on the Albert Mohler Program. Because this is a classic rebroadcast, I'll not be taking calls today, but I think you're going to find this of very, very great interest. Let's look at some issues in the news today. From The Guardian in Great Britain, there is a very interesting article saying that sex education in Great Britain is now going to go down as low as five-year-olds, and that's compulsory. Here's the lead from The Guardian. The government has announced plans to make sex education compulsory for pupils aged 5 to 11, period. Okay, let's think about that for a moment. 5 to 11. You remember being 5? You got a 5-year-old nearby? What kind of sex education would be appropriate for a five-year-old? This is leading to a great deal of controversy in Great Britain, as you might imagine. Also, when it comes to teenagers, all secondary schools in England will for the first time have to teach a core curriculum about sex and contraception in the context of teenagers' relationships. It is a compulsory sex education curriculum that includes sex and contraception. Faith schools there, Britain's a little different, so we're not talking about the United States with the same kind of setup. There you've got faith schools that are partly government-funded. They are going to be able to teach that sex outside of marriage is wrong. They're going to be able to suggest that use of condoms is wrong, but they're going to have to do that only after teaching the core curriculum, which basically teaches the opposite. By the way, there is going to be a necessary part of this compulsory curriculum that deals with homosexuality and other sexual variations, as it says here. For the first time, the secondary schools will have this curriculum covering sex and contraception. What had been optional will now be compulsory. Previously, the schools had only to teach the fundamentals of reproduction, contraception, and puberty in science lessons. All right, you know, this is one of those reminders that when it comes to something like sex education, there is no value-neutral position. One of the things that often frustrates me is I hear people say, well, let's just teach the science, just teach the medicine. There is no just in that, because there are moral issues that are implicit in all of this. You simply can't talk about sex without talking about morality. There's no way. Either explicitly or implicitly, you're teaching a moral lesson. And at least I appreciate the honesty of those who admit that. And it looks like here in Great Britain, this is a pretty in-your-face statement that there's going to be compulsory sex education for all kids starting as young as 5. And you can try to bring in morality in the backside, they say, in terms of the compulsory curriculum. But when it comes to what the students are going to get in this compulsory education, it's going to be pretty much the kind of sex education that the ideologues of the sex education movement have been pressing for a long time. This is Great Britain. The question is how long, of course, before the United States. Those who push these things, Ed Balls, who is the school secretary there in Great Britain, said, quote, it is clear that if children are going to get a well-rounded education which prepares them for life in the 21st century, public school health education, which is what they call their curriculum, has a key role to play, end quote. What you're going to find, by the way, is this kind of logic is already deeply embedded in many of those pushing for sex education in the United States. You're going to find more and more given to students who are younger and younger. And, of course, again, it comes with an agenda. There's simply no doubt about that. The Congressional Quarterly is out with a very ominous word that there are two congresspersons, I should say, and this members of the House of Representatives, who are intending to bring legislation that would allow therapeutic cloning. That is the specified strategic creation of specific human cloned embryos to be used for embryonic stem cell research. Diana DeJet of Colorado, a Democratic member of the House of Representatives, is one of the most radical people in terms of this legislation. She is joining with Representative Michael N. Castle, who is a Republican of Delaware. And so she wants to encourage the National Institutes of Health to fund research based on therapeutic cloning. She said this: I hope the NIH will allow SCNT, that somatic cell nuclear transfer, to move forward with federal funding. But if they don't do that right now, what our bill will do is allow them to change that in the future if research shows it is a necessity and can be done ethically. End quote. The "can be done ethically" is the really kind of Orwellian part of this. There's no way this can be done without specifically creating an embryo in order to destroy it. So when they say that can be done ethically, they really mean the etiquette of it. They don't mean the ethics of it. And we've seen this already in terms of President Obama's policy now released by the National Institutes of Health. They say ethically they're really talking about, for instance, patients' rights to decide matters of disclosure. They're not really talking about the ethics of destroying a human embryo. That's off the table. Very interesting thing here. You have Douglas Johnson, the legislative director for the National Right to Life Committee, who said that Congress basically knows the American public is strongly against human cloning, so they hope to empower NIH to engage it through subterfuge. And by the way, the subterfuge is partly that they will not use the word cloning. Instead, they use this, again, SCNT, which is somatic cell nuclear transfer, which is just a set of initials here, an acronym for human cloning. In Iowa, same-sex couples were able to get married starting on Monday of this week, and it became the third state to allow gay marriage. The first marriages came within just hours of the state Supreme Court ruling that that it would take place on April the 27th, and that's when it happened. It's really, really interesting to see this. I don't know if you saw some of the news coverage, some of the media coverage, but, of course, there was a lot of celebration and homosexual couples who were getting married. And yet, at the same time, a poll came out indicating the vast majority of the citizens of Iowa are against it, which is another reminder to us that this is only taking place because of judicial activism. This does not take place because the Iowa legislature voted on the issue in response to the people. This is not a referendum in which the citizens of Iowa voiced their opinion. This is a situation in which a set of judges, a court, ruled, in this case unanimously, the Iowa Supreme Court, that it must be done. Meanwhile, the Washington Times is reporting that Maine and New Hampshire are the new fronts in the gay marriage battle. According to Valerie Richardson, writing for the Washington Times, gay marriage advocates are looking to New Hampshire and Maine as the next states likely to approve same-sex marriage laws after this month's string of legislative and court victories in New England and the nation's heartland. On Monday, same-sex couples are allowed to legally wed in Iowa, it says here. But the District of Columbia in Washington, D.C. has also voted to recognize same-sex marriages. And then, of course, you had the state of Vermont, where the General Assembly voted to legalize gay marriages. It is a string of significant victories on the part of those pushing for same-sex marriage. It all comes back, though, to the bottom line issue, which is always there before us, and that is this. Once you define marriage to be something other than the union of a man and a woman, you have no intellectual, legislative, legal, judicial barriers to making anything marriage, to declaring any option as equivalent to marriage. If marriage can mean anything other than the union of a man and a woman, it can mean virtually everything other than the union of a man and a woman. When you start looking at some of the issues we've been talking about in recent days, you come to realize that they are not isolated. They are conjoined. They are tied together. There is a network, a nexus of these issues. Sex education, embryonic stem cell research, all these things are very much tied together. Same-sex marriage. It has to do with whether or not you believe that we are defined or whether we have the right to define ourselves. That's the bottom line. The Christian worldview begins with the understanding that we do not define ourselves. We are defined by our Creator. We don't look at ourselves in the mirror and say, what are we? Whose image are we made in? You know, what kind of special status do we have or not have? Instead, our Creator says to us, I made you in my image. And because I made you in my image, there is a special status that comes to human beings. And thus you look at the embryonic stem cell research and the issue of cloning and you say, we have no right. We have no right whatsoever to enter into that because we have no right to enter into the destruction of a human embryo because that is a human being made in the image of God. And then you look at the issue of the compulsory sex education going all the way down to five-year-olds, and then look at the issue of same-sex marriage, whether it's in Iowa or Maine or New Hampshire or elsewhere. The issue is, again, who gets to define our sexuality? Do we define it ourselves? Is it within our right and autonomy to decide what kind of sexual code we will come up with, what kind of sexual rules that we want to put into place, what kind of sexual goals and expectations we want to make normative? Or does our Creator have the right to do that? That's the basic dividing line on this issue. And if you do believe that the Creator is the one who has the sovereign right to determine these things, then what follows is that we have no right to defy Him and try to define them in some other way. What you're looking at here is a clash that goes far beyond stem cell research or sex education or same-sex marriage. It gets to the core of what it means to be human, the core of what it means to believe in a God who has the right to set terms. We'll be right back with the Albert Miller Program.
This is the best of the Albert Moeller Program. The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. Back just a few days ago on March the 2nd, I published an article entitled A Birthday Party You Might Miss. You can find it at albertmoeller.com. I began the article this way. I said, I recently discovered that I share a birth year with Barbara Millicent Roberts. We will both turn 50 this year, but her birthday comes first. From what I have seen of her in recent media appearances, she isn't showing many signs of age. Then again, Barbara Millicent Roberts is a doll. Most people know her by the name Barbie, and she has been a controversial figure from the start. And by the way, her figure has been controversial from the start. Her full name was revealed in a series of authorized novels published in the 1960s, but nobody calls her Barbara Millicent Roberts. She's merely Barbie. Barbie's been around for 50 years. And the backstory to Barbie is, now get this, a lot of people don't have a clue about this. The backstory is that she was based upon a German sex doll. And the real story about Barbie is pretty unbelievable. Ruth Handler was one of the co-founders of Mattel. And she had noticed this doll, and she had decided, I'm reading here, by the way, from the book entitled Toy Monster, The Big Bad World of Mattel by Jerry Oppenheimer. It's published by Wiley Publishers. This is what Mr. Oppenheimer writes. This is about Ruth Handler. It says she stated that in the early 1950s, she had watched her daughter, Barbara, then approaching adolescence, and her friends playing with cutout dolls, paper renditions of young career women, nurses, secretaries, all very feminine and sexualized. She saw how the girls dressed them and fantasized about their make-believe lives. As Handler saw it, quote, they were using these dolls to project their dreams. So one day it hit me, why or wouldn't it be great if we could take that play pattern and three-dimensionalize it so little girls could do their dreaming and role-playing with real dolls and real clothes instead of the flimsy paper or cardboard ones. Now, later in Lucerne, Switzerland, in 1956, when she was on a bit of travel, she spotted a plastic doll in a shop window that was, quote, the embodiment of the adult-looking doll she had been unsuccessfully advocating back at the Mattel's headquarters. She stood, her word was transfixed, with 15-year-old daughter Barbara at her side, gazing at the 11.5-inch plastic rendition dressed in a tight miniature ski outfit. I was gripped, she said. Called Build Lily, the doll had everything she claimed she had been envisioning for a marketable money-making product. Long legs, thin waist, I'm not going to say the next part, the same feminine attributes that Jack Ryan, that is her co-founder, had wanted, eventually engineered into Barbie. You know, a lot of people don't know, would have no idea that Barbie was based upon a German sex doll. Let me just read what it says here, and there are parts of this I'm not going to read. It says, Build Lily, that is the doll, had the look of an erotic German woman with arched eyebrows and a tightly pulled back ponytail. In the latter part of the first decade of the 21st century, Lily's real-life counterpart, goes on, might be some of these modern actresses that have a very similar appearance. This is what it goes on to say. Lily was based on a sexy, popular cartoon character whose floozy lifestyle was depicted in a hugely popular cartoon strip. The doll was made as the three-dimensional form of this cartoon character and, quote, turned into an adult novelty, a doll that men hung from their rearview mirrors or gave as suggestive gifts to their women, end quote. So that's the backstory about Barbie. And as Barbie came out from Mattel, She was so similar in appearance to Bill Lilly that it led to many lawsuits and ongoing litigation between the German company and Mattel. Now, a lot of American parents have handed that doll to their girls, having no idea her origin. I think it's time we talk about this, because the point I want to make in this is not just the scandal related. I think it is a scandal related to Barbie and her invention and distribution. I think it's what Barbie did to many, many girls, untold numbers of girls, and saying this is what femininity looks like. And if you don't measure up to this, you're simply not beautiful. And by the way, measuring up to this is impossible. According to doctors, the actual figure of the contemporary Barbie doll, which, by the way, has been growing in significant ways during that time, that it's anatomically impossible and in any sense fundamentally unhealthy. But there you have it. The phone number is 877-893-8255. I think Christian parents ought to be thinking about it. I think just intelligent Christians ought to note this is something that tells us a great deal about how we view not only women, but how we view girls. The phone number is 877-893-8255. I've got a lot of people who want to talk about this. We're getting it to as many calls as possible. Let's go to Colorado Springs. Matthew is listening on KGFT. What do you think about this, Matthew?
Well, I definitely agree with you. About 20 years ago, I bought a little Barbie doll for my niece. My sister took it away and said, Matt, you can't give that to her, and explained it all to me. And I didn't quite understand it until I married my own Barbie, a prom queen 5 years my junior. And even now, after 25 years of marriage with her, she's still trying to live up to that Barbie image. And it, you know, I know it's just ingrained in women, and it's sad.
Well, I appreciate your call, Matthew. It's a very personal and I think effective word that you've given us there, because you're speaking out of the testimony of loving your own wife, whom you obviously see as beautiful. And I appreciate that. When you called her your own Barbie, you see her as beautiful, and you probably see her as more beautiful than she sees herself because of the expectations that she feels have been put upon her. And I think we're sexualizing young girls so early, and we are giving them lies about beauty. And I think it leads to a great deal of harm. And by the way, it doesn't just harm little girls who turn into young women. It harms little boys who turn into young men. You know, I will tell you point blank that one of the words I have received from Christian young men is that they admit artificial expectations of feminine beauty that cause them problems when they think about getting married. That is tragedy. That's Genesis 3 right before our eyes. The scriptural understanding of beauty is that it's grounded in the reality of God, and the Christian worldview believes, because it is revealed in the fact that God is the source of everything good, that the good and the beautiful and the true are the same thing, which means that artificial, synthetic, airbrushed, cosmetically enhanced beauty is not beautiful. The truth is what is beautiful. And beauty, according to the scripture, is a matter of character, not a matter of the physical appearance. God has given us some incredible gifts. These gifts can be distorted and manipulated. And the gift of physical beauty is a gift, but it can lie. It can lie about the character that is within. It can lie to young girls about what is expected of them. The phone number is 877-893-8255. We've got lots of people on the line. And when we come back from this break, we're going to get to as many calls as possible. We'd also like to hear from you at mail@albertmuller.com. On Twitter and on Facebook. Twitter, Mueller Radio. Facebook, the Albert Mueller Program. 50 years is a long time. You're looking at a major cultural issue in America. That's more than 20% of American history. You're now looking at 1959 as the year when the Barbie doll was released. And so you're looking at now successive generations every decade. Think of that. 5 decades. Think of all the girls. Mattel claims that $1 billion Barbie dolls have been distributed. $1 billion. I wonder if they have a marquee out front like McDonald's with the hamburgers used to have, with the numbers going up and up and up. By the way, over the years, Barbie has come out in many different forms, but all of them are rooted in the conception of beauty that originated the entire project in the first place. The phone number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Back with more on the Albert Mueller Program.
the best of the Albert Mueller Program. We won't be taking your phone calls today, but stay tuned for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mueller is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Cultural effects sometimes take time to be revealed. The impact of any factor sometimes takes a generation really to show up. When it came to the Barbie dolls release in 1959, the fact is most parents certainly were not thinking, we're going to give our daughter a highly sexualized female figurine. They were saying, here's a popular toy. It was all the rage beginning in 1959. By 1960, the company was having a hard time even keeping up with orders. Distributors were doling them out to favored stores on lots of as few as 6 or 12. Now, of course, that's not the problem. They are thoroughly available. Mattel's gone through its own convolutions as every other company. Barbie's gone through several different modifications and additions. But the bottom line is that now 50 years of American girls turning into young women have had their views of femininity shaped by Barbie. And I find that a fascinating cultural milestone, which is why we're talking about it today. Most Americans don't know the backstory. They don't know how Barbie came to be. They don't know the worldview behind those who were promoting her. They did not know that, for instance, Ruth Handler, the co-founder of Mattel, whose idea Barbie was in terms of bringing her to the United States, that the fact that she was an adult sexualized figure was exactly what she thought adolescent girls needed. Let's go to the phones. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go first to Orlando, Florida. Kim's on the line. What are you thinking, Kim?
Yeah, hi. I think Barbie's impact on childhood is probably related to the child's environment. I'm share Barbie's birthday year, same age, grew up on a farm, helped with all the chores on a daily basis, very tomboyish. So to me, the Barbie was like, wow, a dress, high heels, something I normally wouldn't have thought of. And I would give credit to the Barbie for, inspiring me to learn femininity, at least to wear a dress every now and then. And I think many of your listeners are also going to share this. In those days of growing up with Barbie, those clothes were very expensive, so many of us girls at 9, 10 years old were learning how to sew, really early, and make doll clothes, which today we make, human clothes, which is a fantastic skill to have.
I appreciate the call, Kim. It's always good to hear a counter voice. And by the way, happy 50th birthday this year. That's something I also share with now you and Barbie. Let's just say that a lot of history was made in 1959, just in terms of the fact that 50 years ago, the world was a very different place. It was in the middle of the Cold War, the last of the Eisenhower years. America was a very, very different place. Before long, America would go through the convolutions of everything from the Cuban Missile Crisis and the Kennedy years, the Kennedy assassination, the Civil Rights Movement, the 60s, and the Sexual Revolution and all the rest. I think it's important for us to realize that Barbie preceded all of that in terms of the Sexual Revolution. And Kim, in terms of femininity, that's an important word to say. And I'm in no position to speak about what it meant for a little girl to have Barbie other than my observation of what many women have said to me about that experience. But I think for a lot of girls, the problem is it's a femininity they think they can't reach, they can't attain. And that affects their self-image as well and their understanding of what women are like. But I understand your point, Kim. Thanks for the call. And I can understand we're in a different context. Barbie might be seen in a different light. Fair enough. Let's go to Clarksville, Indiana. Dodie's listening on WFIA. What are your thoughts, Dodie?
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I'm a little concerned because I think you're putting too much emphasis on where the concept of Barbie came from and her physical attributes.
Okay. Well, that is, however, why she was made and how she was marketed. But go on. I appreciate your call. Go ahead.
Well, through the years, Barbie has been a vet. She's been an astronaut. I mean, I think she helps young girls, with their career choices and lets them know that they can be more than, not that there's anything wrong with it, but a housewife. There's careers out there for women. And I don't think little girls pick her up and just say, this is what I need to look at, because she can be so much more than just a face.
Let me ask you a question here, Dodie. We're about to run out of time, but can you imagine Barbie as a mom?
Sure.
Okay, that's interesting. That is one factor that has been often pointed out, is that that as Barbie was presented as many different things, not often presented as a mom. Thanks for your call, Dodie. Appreciate your point of view. Yours can be next. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Is the best of the Albert Mueller Program. The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. As we have said, many people don't know the backstory to Barbie, the fact that Bill Lilly, the doll upon which she was based, was a German sex toy, a cartoon character that was turned into a three-dimensional toy. 50 years ago, Barbie was released in the United States by Mattel. Now, billions of dolls and billions of dollars later, it is fascinating to see what Barbie has come to represent. By the way, in Saudi Arabia, the government's Committee for the Propagation of Virtue and the Prevention of Vice. By the way, don't you think that's interesting? You know, this might be a different culture if we had a Department of Virtue and Prevention of Vice. But the Saudi Arabian Department Committee once denied Barbie entrance into the kingdom of the House of Saud, complaining that she is, too revealing. She has revealing clothes and shameful postures. That's very, very interesting. A lot of parents have felt the same way. But that is the secret to why she came to exist in the first place and came to be such an American marketing phenomenon. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Linda calling from Minnesota, listening on XM170. Go ahead, Linda.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, Dr. Mueller. I just wanted to share, like the earlier caller, surprisingly, I was raised with Barbie and so was my sister, and she graduated near the top of her class, and I'm a physician, so I don't think, and again, hindsight is 20/20, if my parents knew the origination of Barbie, I doubt they probably would have purchased her for us. But the point is, I don't think any of us in that generation really looked at her as an idealistic woman to become, per se, rather than a toy to play with. And I made clothes for her and built cute little houses. And again, I think at the point we were raised, we were not looking at her in any way or format as this is the woman I want to look like or become. So I think, again, if you're raised with good morals and values, a lot of this stuff, I think, goes by the wayside that, you know, we're talking about, but it's a good point to bring up nonetheless.
Linda, I appreciate your call, and that's why at the beginning of the program I said we can't just reduce this to simple causality, like one phenomenon of pop culture corrupts an entire generation's understanding of femininity. I don't see Barbie so much as the cause, but as a symptom here. I see Barbie as a symptom of a society that, just to take it at face value, just very honestly at face value. And I'm going to say something here that I didn't think I would say at the beginning of this program, but I think I'm morally obligated to say this. Just to look at Barbie at face value, you're looking at some obviously exaggerated features. And the father in me simply has to wonder, would we really want to hand a girl a doll with these particular features exaggerated? And if so, what are we saying? Now, I think Linda's point is an awful lot of parents handed it to the kids without meaning to say anything. You know, it was a popular doll. It was something girls were clamoring for. There was a market for it. Every little girl seemed to have one. It's constantly, I can remember as a boy, you know, you watch television and it was the constant Barbie advertisement. You know, Barbie this, Barbie that. It's one thing after another. But I just think if we stand back and look at it, even literally, just look at the doll, we go, wow, that probably didn't originate as someone's wholesome understanding of what adult females were to look like and that little girls are supposed to aspire to. Linda, I appreciate your call. Again, simple causality, that's not what we're looking at here. Blaming Barbie for today's scourges of an economy in recession and everything from, brutality on the streets to rising sea levels. That's not what we're about. She's a symptom of a highly sexualized society. And I think that the sales, the marketing, the advertising have really leaned into that as well. Thanks for your call. Let's go to Melissa calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Melissa.
Hi, Dr. Moeller. I just wanted to say that my parents didn't let me play with Barbie when I was a little girl for the same reason that they didn't let me look at a lot of those teen girls magazines, because they just felt that the image that they kept perpetuating was not healthy for me to look at. And in retrospect, I would agree with that. As a teenage girl, you're very susceptible to when something's put in front of your face, that's what you start to believe you're supposed to look like. And so I wasn't allowed to play with Barbie for the same reason I wasn't allowed to buy and look at teen magazines.
Very, very interesting. I appreciate that word, Melissa. You know, when you think about those teen magazines, by the way, again, I think most parents would be shocked to be aware of what's in them. Now, this is years ago. I rush to say a long time ago, 30 years ago. I was a minister of youth and in more than one church over time. And, one of the things that I had occur is that I had a mother come and dump on my desk a pile of magazines that she had confiscated from her daughter. And she said, "Do you have any idea what's in this stuff?" Well, no, I certainly had not had any reason to look at those magazines. But with some others, just quickly looking through, I realized these are magazines directed to young girls, and the content was absolutely shocking. You know, it was like all of a sudden you had Cosmopolitan for the preteen set. And I find that a phenomenon that's downright scary. And Melissa, I think your parents did the right thing. And I appreciate the fact you said in hindsight you can understand why they did. Thanks for your call. Let's go to Colorado Springs, where Suzanne's on the line. Go ahead, Suzanne.
Hi. I have boys, and I notice everybody's talking about the effect that the doll may have on girls. Well, being the fact that I have sons, she is very sexual when you look at her for children, for boys.
Yes,
and that
absolutely.
Disturbs me.
Yeah, now to play that out just a little bit for me, Suzanne. Now, your sons aren't likely to encounter a Barbie as a doll they have, obviously. So they're watching this, you mean mostly by advertisements on television and seeing her in the toy store, et cetera?
No, my sons had a friend who had a sister.
Oh.
And my son's friends used to bring the Barbie over to the house, and I caught them looking at the Barbie, and they would have her clothes off and things like that because she was a very sexual looking person.
Okay, there, right there, Suzanne. Thanks for your call. There's the parable. If no one's attention was captured by this until now, my guess is parents across the country are going, "Okay, I can see that." Yeah, Suzanne, invaluable. Thanks for the call. That's very, very helpful. And we made the point earlier that it's not only about shaping the view and misshaping the view of femininity on the part of young girls, but also of young boys. But I got to tell you, no one has the credibility to make that point like a mom, like Suzanne, who shared that account. We'll be back with final thoughts in just a moment. This is a place for intelligent Christian conversation. You're listening to the Albert Moeller Program. You knew there had to be more to the story of Barbie than meets the eye, but what meets the eye really gets to the heart of the issue with Barbie. What Barbie does more than anything else is to lie. Now, of course, a doll doesn't say anything in terms of words, but that doll is saying something by her appearance. Barbie is communicating a vision of femininity and of beauty that is, first of all, as we said, medically impossible, and it is aesthetically just wrong. Because what it does is it insinuates that female beauty, feminine beauty, comes down to the kind of cosmetic appearance that Barbie has. You know, the very fact that she was basically developed out of a German sex doll tells you a great deal about the power of the market in the United States. I mean, here you have a product. And you know good and well that if America's parents knew back 50 years ago that Barbie was developed from a German sex toy, they wouldn't be buying it by the millions and putting it into their hands of their young school-age daughters. But Barbie has become a phenomenon. And as a matter of fact, as we talked about, the Mattel Corporation really made Barbie the centerpiece of its corporate identity. It's what really made that company so much of what it is today. And the story of Barbie is not over. Now, as you walk into the store, you walk into different parts of the world, you can find Barbies in many different editions, and it's all the combination, the intersection of marketing and morality. You know, the issue of Barbie in this case should be a wake-up call to us all. Whenever you have something like this, it's just a reminder that the issues of the marketplace are always more deeply embedded with moral issues than we often recognize. What we're really looking at here is the fact that we as Christians better take responsibility for our consumer choices, for our engagement with the economy, for how we respond to marketed messages, and for how we allow our own expectations, our own frame of reference to be changed by the kind of messages we get from marketing, advertising, and all the rest. You know, thinking about Barbie is to think about the power of popular culture. We are so often unaware as Christians and unthinking about the fact that we are really influenced by the culture around us in ways that we often do not even recognize. We are like the fish swimming in the ocean, unaware that there is a world above. And it is because we are so surrounded by cultural artifacts that make us comfortable, that are delights to the eyes, that are fascinating, and of course, in the case of Barbie, make millions of dollars as well. So the next time you're out as you're thinking about making purchases, just think about what's going on here. What does this product represent? And if you go into your daughter's bedroom and look at the Barbies up on the shelf, just remember, they are teaching a message. They are communicating a message. And quite frankly and honestly, I think it's a message I don't want my daughter to absorb and to accept. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. It's where we can look at something like this kind of development in the culture, the 50th anniversary of Barbie, or we can look at the issues of biomedical ethics or whatever is being thrown at us, because we're absolutely confident that the Christian faith offers the full wealth of conviction, all that we need to think Christianly about the decisions of everyday life. Thanks for listening today to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.